You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, what you need to know is being brought to you by Morongo Casino Resort and Spa. Good times, less than 90 minutes from wherever you are. Here she is, everybody, at UNEEQ underscore. Here's Laura Romo.
All right, guys. Thanks, Scott. Always nice when you intro me because you shut up my handles. So make sure you follow your girl. Anyways, as you guys know, March is Women's History Month, and the LA Rams partnered up with Nike to host a flag football clinics this weekend for girls. And I thought that was pretty badass because I know a lot of people that think women should not be playing football. They're here and
really?
They're there. Yeah, but that's a whole other conversation I ain't trying to have right now on the air. Anyways, they were coached by Jasmine Edwards, who plays free safety for the LA-based Cali War football team of the Women's Football Alliance. She's one of the many coaches that was involved this weekend. And the camps were held at Edward Vincent Park in Inglewood. Shout out to Inglewood.
Okay.
No, you're up to no good.
Inglewood.
And along the drills, obviously they did drills, they competed, the girls heard real life stories about these female players, and I don't know, I love that, man. I love when, especially as someone who played sports, and a lot of men were like,
yeah.
Do you really want to play that? You really should be doing that. I love that young women see women doing it and hear their stories and kind of get experiences. And I just wanted to shout out the Rams, you know, because that is my team too, and Nike for putting this together.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a whole lot better than that crap they used to do where they'd have people called, like, I don't know, heels and touchdowns or whatever, where they'd be like, here's what we're going to teach you about da-da-da, as if you can't learn what the game is on your own. No, just play. You know what I'm saying? That's how people have the most fun. That's really cool, Scott.
Yeah, I've been a part of a few of these where the NFL team invites women who are really into the game, really love the sport, and they put on these clinics, and you know they bring in NFL referees to talk about the rules. They have the coaches speak. They have the players talk. And then I love the whole idea of getting out on the field and putting everybody through the drills. Clinton, I once and this is a great idea for the Rams, by the way, and I didn't come up with this idea. The Seattle Seahawks came up with it. And then I started to kind of share it with PR staffs around the NFL, and people started to use it. I loved it. So the Seahawks came up with this plan where they were trying to get the media to understand all the different things that players have to go through before the draft or during, like, the combine. So the Seahawks had essentially what was a media combine.
Okay.
So you ran the 40-yard dash.
Oh, this is big Kaplan territory right here.
Right. You do, like, the standing broad jump.
Right.
You know, they put you through a gauntlet where there's, like, five coaches on one side, five on the other, and they're whipping balls at you, and you got to try and catch them one by one.
Shuttle run and all that, yeah.
So I would say this to the Rams and the Rams PR staff. Having the media on the field and being coached by the Rams coaching staff and going through all of the apparati, I'm not sure.
You know, if you can't even use that word correctly, Scott, I'm not sure. That's something I have time to do. I'm Sean McVay. I'm the youngest coach to ever win a Super Bowl, and I certainly didn't do it by having old, washed-up radio guys run around my football field. I'm Sean McVay.
Well, you know, part of the fun of it was, Clinton.
That would be fun, though.
Was who's going to get hurt.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I'm telling you, like, one of the guys I saw, you know, started his 40-yard dash, and he tried to stretch out, and he tried to loosen up, and he was probably, like, in his mid-50s, and in, like, by about the 20-yard line of the 40-yard dash, hamstring pops.
Oof.
You know?
That would be fun, though, overall. Those kinds of things are fun because it sort of allows you to remind yourself what exactly is going on in any given field if you're not the type of person that knows or has any experience with it. So jugs machines are fun. Jugs machines can hurt you, but I would watch Kaplan kick against the rest of the LA media. That's what I would watch.
Yeah, it's probably a broken leg, you know, just like waiting to happen. Seriously, like, or a messed up knee. It's just old and not good anymore. I can tell you that. Laura can attest.
Okay, Laura and I did not do that bad. Don't get all melancholy on here, like saying that you can't do stuff.
Fishing.
Know? He wants the compliments. I know.
I was going to say, who is this person that is speaking right now? Usually, this is the same guy who said, I could do 50 push-ups, no problem. I could do more push-ups than Alan Sliwa, no problem. Like, who is this?
Right. Like, I'm usually ultra overconfident about things. But in this particular instance, I'm like, yo, listen, I'm just washed up and old when it comes to
doing confidence
that.
Is something that we teach here. We need that in our guys in order to be able to run our sets. I don't really like this low energy from you, Scott. I'm Sean McVay.
Hey, I'm just telling you, artists and Rams PR staff, hear me out. Take the local media, invite them to come out and run drills, go on the field, be coached by the coaches.
Why are you trying to
it?
Kill Mason?
No, right.
I mean, we love you, Mace. We love you.
Oh man! All right. Hey, listen,
no, they do that in other markets, Cap. I'm sure we could arrange for it to happen.
Yeah. Again, like I said, the first time I'd ever seen it was the Seattle Seahawks, and this is years ago when the Chargers were in San Diego. And I called the PR guy, and I go, "Listen, you guys are trying to find a way to keep the team in town, and you kind of need the media on your side in this case. Why don't we do a media combine?" And they went, yeah, that's a great idea. And I'm like, yeah, I'd love to take credit for it, but it was the Seahawks. Mm. And they put it on, and it was awesome. So I'm saying to the Rams, before you get beaten to the punch, put on a media combine, Rams.
I'll do play by play. We can have a remote there for all.
No play by play. You got to be involved, dude,
bro.
He's gonna kill the competition.
You think
Rick?
They can afford your boy out there running around in my sexy short shorts? Cause they can't.
Ooh.
I'm joking. I would do it.
But shout out to the Rams and Nike for doing that.
Yeah, that is cool. Thank you, Laura.
That's really cool.
Speaking of human beings challenging professionals in their sphere of excellence, mm-hmm. I believe there's something you wanted to bring up, Scott.
Well, I do. I want to get your opinion on what happened last night between Russell Westbrook and an LA Times reporter. And listen, here's the thing. I will admit, I find the post-game press conferences, especially when the Lakers lose or get smashed like they did last night with no LeBron and no AD, not that we've expected AD, but I find these post-game press conferences to be more entertaining than the actual games. But truth be told, Clinton, I did not see this Russell Westbrook post-game press conference last night. So this morning I wake up and I got to get on my Peloton to work with my boy Alex Toussaint. You like the Peloton?
I'm not in the club. I'm not one of you. No.
You're out on Peloton.
I'm not out. I'm just not in.
Laura, I want you to know I did a 45-minute Club Bangers ride this morning with Alex.
Club Bangers awesome. Is the one.
Yep.
Club Bangers is a whole bit, Clinton.
Go on. I know. That just made me laugh a lot. Go on.
So I'm watching First Take on ESPN this morning. There's no Stephen A. And they're talking about what happened last night with Russell Westbrook. And there was a very provocative headline. I wish I would have written it down or taken a picture. Very provocative headline. Like something bad happened between Russell Westbrook and the media last night in the postgame press conference. I'm like, ooh, what is this all about? I missed this. Because the game was so lame and so boring. I moved on. So I look it up. And I see it. And it's not that bad. But I got to say, I'm so tired of these athletes trying to intimidate the writers who are just there to do their job. You know, like this whole notion of I'm going to intimidate you by putting it back on you. And then when you don't have the answer for me, then it's you who doesn't know what you're doing. And I love this guy, Brad Turner from the LA Times, was like, bro, you're a professional basketball player. I'm the guy with the questions. You're supposed to be the guy with the answers. Why are you looking at me like I'm the coach of the team?
Yeah, I mean, it was a tricky exchange, but I think that and let's hear it. How about that?
No. Then why is that?
Because it doesn't. It was a change. We still got games to play. Other teams still got games to play. We still got to play teams that's above us in the play-in. Don't really change much. What do you think should change?
Winning. Be something.
Okay, so it's
that's
important.
Obvious. What do you think should change?
It's important to note that at the part where he asked him the question and Brad says winning, Russ gets up and walks out. Because right. At that point, I guess he's just tired of it, which is understandable, but there's a second part. It's longer. Let's hit that, Laura.
Do you have the answer to winning?
I'm not out there playing. Maybe I think I'm. You give me the answer what you think.
Exactly. So, well, I don't have the answer.
You
know, exactly.
If so, you don't have it, you out there. I can't have it.
You ask me if I have an answer. You don't have it either.
Well, but I don't play, Russell. If you, I want to get the information from you so that
I'm
give
only one person,
it.
Champ.
Right.
It's a team game. Right. So I don't have an answer.
Okay.
I may have it.
I don't have it.
It's all good.
But I'm asking the pros who know the game, play the game.
Yeah, yeah.
What you guys, what you think you can do to make it your part, yeah, their part, everybody's part.
Sure.
That's what I'm asking.
No, I really, man. Okay. I respect that.
Okay.
You got that? You got that?
No.
You got it?
No respect. We
can
do
it. It's good. It's good. You got that? All right, cool. You got it. Make sure you record that.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a couple things here. I think that intimidation is not what's happening in that situation. First of all, I don't think Brad was intimidated. And secondly, I don't want to put Russell onto that because that's just kind of how he talks. So I'll give it that. But my issue with that exchange is that there's a certain element of, I just want to say, bad faith communication, where it's like, if you're going to ask somebody what they think, and then as soon as they answer, you just get up and leave. Well, why did you even ask that question? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you really wanted to know what Brad thought was the issue, and you asking him, even if you are being a little squirrely just in terms of what we know we're here for, like, listen to him, man. You know what I'm saying? And if you're going to say something, don't just denigrate him for not being the pro. That's the whole point of the exchange. And, like, I just thought that that kind of was a little intellectually unfair, and it just came across as just unnecessary. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, if we're going to have an honest exchange of ideas or opinions, let that be the case. But don't have it be, okay, well, if you know so much, what you think? And then when they say what they think, you're acting like, well, what do you know anyway? Well, I mean, come on, man. You know what I'm saying? You just asked me what I thought. And that's where I thought it was got a little sideways, but they're obviously going to get along professionally. I just, from a smarts standpoint, I don't get why those conversations go there. It's not an intimidation one for me.
Yeah, for me it is. I feel like the athlete is, hey, I'm the big, strong, superstar athlete, and you're the writer, and you have the audacity to ask me these questions, and then when I put it back on you and you don't have the answers, I'm going to get up and walk out on you, and then kind of stand there kind of face-to-face. And then Russell Westbrook looks and realizes that everybody in the room has their phone out. You know why? Because every one of those guys is going, ooh, I'm about to get a viral video right here. This is going to be interesting. And I just feel like, Russ, it's just not that difficult. You know, the team stinks. The team is losing. There's no LeBron. There's no AD. You're the superstar that's remaining based on your past. And so you're going to get a lot of questions. And when you're asked questions, like there was part of that press conference where they were asking him about how Luka was going off. And he kind of was like, well, I wasn't defending against him, as if to say, you know, it wasn't me. And then when they ask him questions, he's like, hey, look, it's a team game. Like at one moment, it's not about me. And in the next moment, it's a team game. I feel like there's just so many inconsistencies to his personality. And I just wonder if anybody thought about any of these things before they decided to bring him to the Lakers. Because, man, oh, man, has he just brought a ton of unnecessary added fuel to the fire.
I mean, I hear you, but I don't actually – this is kind of what my point is more largely, too. I don't actually think it's that serious unless this offends you. And, like, to me, having seen many far more confrontational interactions between players and writers, this is a natural extension of the frustration of the season, which is why I think Brad ultimately was like, listen, bro, I'm just doing my job. And he's like, me too. And so you can judge him at a higher level, Russell, that is, because he is the athlete and because this particular part of the performance is his job. But I don't need to be worrying about his personalities. I just, for me, it's a matter of, and this is why I said this a couple weeks ago, the DNPCD element. Why are we putting Russell in this position? You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm in that presser too, I'm not saying I'm not asking about it because that's, you know, obviously what he's doing covering the game, but it's just kind of like, man, how many times are we going to do this? If you're tuning in simply to watch post-game fireworks, Scott, to me, that's not how I run a team. You know what I'm saying? That's not how I would be treating my players or how I would be handling this, especially when the season is completely up in smoke.
Are you saying that you wouldn't have made him available to the media?
Perhaps. I don't know, but this is part of the reason why I wouldn't necessarily be that pressed about. I don't really know how I would handle that, but I know that every single time I see Russell Westbrook in a press conference, it seems to be a problem. Outside of when he was talking about that sweatshirt that his son made for him, which was awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know why? Because they won that game, so yeah, he was happy.
That's fair.
Hey, I'll tell you right now, shout out to Brad Turner. I thought Brad Turner handled himself like a total pro, didn't back down. I felt like he was smart in the way he tried to defuse the situation. I loved the way he called him Russell. He didn't call him Russ. You know, he didn't call him Brody. He called him Russell. It was almost like a way of saying, hey, man, chill out. You know, I liked it. I thought Brad Turner did a great job in handling himself in that situation.
That's to Brad. He comes on a lot with Slee, so.
Yeah, very good job, Brad. Nice job, man. All right, stick around, everybody. Coming up, Clinton, I got some other things I want to talk to you like this. Are you a golf fan at all?
Sort of. I can tell you on the other side.
All right, because I'm asking because if Tiger's playing in the Masters, I'll be watching. Stick around. I want to get to that story coming up. This is Sedano and Cap on 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, it's a good song.
Talk about a banger.
Yeah.
I found myself this is a really weird story, but like I found myself listening to this song at a brunch solo, sobbing at my table.
Whoa.
Because I had gone home. What happened was this. I had gone back to DC for something. And I was actually in Baltimore, but I popped over to D.C. and I'd come back. And there was just all of these memories in my mind about, like, what I'd left and things I liked.
It was all coming back to
you. It was all literally coming back to me. And I had a couple champagnes, and your boy found himself on the Celine Dion. And it was great. I love this song.
She hits the spot.
I got to ask a couple questions in there, though.
Sure.
You said you were having brunch by yourself.
Well, I mean, it was brunch time. Point is, I was drinking before noon, and it was the weekend, and it was in public. That's what brunch means.
That's brunch, man. It's like brunch, that's what the picture is
exactly,
right next to it. Yep.
Right, but you're by yourself, right?
I was by myself only because I was waiting for a friend to come meet me, is what was happening.
And you're drinking champagne, you said?
Correct.
And then is the song on in, like, the establishment?
I think I had heard it somewhere. Yeah, you're asking how I even got to that point because I don't have Celine Dion in the regular rotation
Maybe
or in the rotation
Maybe you, like, heard
role.
It when you were in the restroom
I think
or
it was, like, in a commercial or something, and it had found its way into my head somehow. And I was like, huh, let me actually play that. Or I might have been listening to, like, something else that it got into the, you know, into the algorithm, Al Gore's rhythms, as we like to call them on the internet. But
and you started getting emotional,
very emotional. I was listening to the song and I ran it back. That's how, like, into it I was, even though I was crying. So, you know, I mean, what are you gonna do? Wow. It's all coming back to me now.
I understand. Listen, great, I understand song. Emotion. Sometimes you just, you know, this right song, right time,
yeah.
Hit you
here, know? Got me, as they say.
Yeah, or like just like Clinton, since we're going to share some feelings here right now. last weekend, not this past weekend, the weekend before, girlfriend and I go away for a little weekend getaway because the Lakers were playing on Friday and Monday, so I had 2 days off, right?
Oh, yeah, like you popped out to Morongo, just like the commercial?
Not exactly. We popped down to Laredo, Mexico.
Oh.
I don't know if you've seen any of my videos that I posted on social media, but we were on a boat.
I did see that.
We ran into a pod of orcas. So killer whales, you know?
Okay.
The kind of stuff you only see on TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm on this boat, and I'm with my girlfriend, and there's just me, her, and the captain and the hand, you know, the one guy there to help.
Yeah.
And these orcas are jumping out of the water, and I just have this, like, emotional reaction, like, oh, my God. I have chartered a boat with my girl, with a captain.
Oh, yeah.
And these orcas are jumping out of the water. And I'm like, all of a sudden, I just start, like, whimpering. Like, like how did this happen?
Didn't think it could be this great.
And I got emotional.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I mean, this is, listen, I cry, for lack of a better term, a lot, comparatively. You know what I'm saying? But this was one, Celine Dion, because I think it was also a situation where, what, is that song on a soundtrack or something? Like, all coming back to me now. Where was that song originally from, or was it just a hit she dropped?
I mean, it was a big hit, and it also had a very emotional, graphic, memorable video.
Okay.
Yes, music video.
Because I felt like there was also some, there was some time nostalgia there, because I probably wasn't listening to, like, there's a lot of stuff that I didn't listen to at the time, but I understood was popular, but it wasn't my jam. So a certain amount of the song was relatively new to me in terms of, like, what it was really about. You know what I'm saying? And I was just like, oh, dear, I'm overcome. So, Scott, I totally understand. Sometimes you're in those life moments where you're like, I can't believe this is really my life. You know what I mean? And that's how it is.
Dude, if you and me wind up going to a Celine Dion concert together, we're going to, like, have to hold hands. We're going to be crying.
As long as we bring Kesha, it'll all be fine.
Right, in between us.
The video, I remember the video very vividly. There was, like, a guy at the beginning, and he was in a motorcycle crash, and then he dies, and she's, like, haunted by him.
Oh, no.
It's very, like,
cinematic.
It's intense, for sure.
Oh, man. Laura's got it up on the screen here. She's all up in the wistful... Oh, man, the four-cornered bed with the full-blown silk sheets? Celine really is a classic diva. Oh, no! The wind just blew down their picture! Oh! I could make a killing good play-by-play of Celine Dion.
You were going to start
videos.
Crying again.
No, I wasn't, because this is so ridiculous that I'm laughing. But, you know, thank you for that, Laura. She just turned it around to show me. That's hilarious.
All right, Clint, let me ask you this. Today is Wednesday, and 1 week from today, the festivities get underway in Augusta at the Masters. Mm-hmm. And there's been all this talk over the last couple of days that Tiger Woods has been down to Augusta. In fact, he played a round of golf the way it's been reported with his son. And I'm trying to remember some other PGA Tour player. I don't remember if it was Adam Scott or somebody like that.
It was Justin Thompson, I believe.
Justin Thomas. So Tiger is, I'm going to say, prepping to attempt to play the Masters next week. And here's the thing. For everybody that tells me that Duke, North Carolina, this upcoming Saturday night, will be the most watched NCAA tournament basketball game in the history of the NCAA tournament, if Tiger Woods plays in the Masters and somehow, some way, finds himself not purely trying to win on Sunday, but still in it on Sunday, I think this could be the most watched Masters of all time.
That already happened, Scott.
Well, it has, but this could possibly eclipse that.
I don't think so. I think there's a well. I mean, like, yeah, people love Tiger. I like Tiger, but I think this is as real as it gets. I like seeing Tiger play golf because it looks like where he's happiest. But there's just a little too many people that only associate Tiger Woods with their personal feelings about who they are and him winning. And it's like, this dude, lucky to be alive, dealt with a lot of stuff. The best iteration of Tiger that I see now is one you mentioned earlier with Charlie. I mean, when he plays with his son, it's one of the most amazing things to look at in terms of humanizing Tiger on a certain level, in terms of how much Charlie is like him on a golf course. I think the reason why he's going to try to do this is that he can take his son to see it. I honestly think that that's what we're talking about here. I don't think he cares about winning. I think he cares about maybe getting around the track one last time. And again, having Charlie see this is what Dad did, even though he was there that one time where he had a good run, I think it's a little different now that Charlie's older and might want to golf himself at a real level.
I actually agree with you that I think Tiger Woods playing and him being as close with his son, and we see them on the course together, how much they look alike, how much they play and swing alike, and how good the kid is already. I think a lot of it is showing your children perseverance. Like,
yeah.
Dad was the best. Then Dad just got into this terrible car accident to the point where people said, you know, he's lucky to be alive. And Dad has spent a ton of time trying to get his body back together, not necessarily to come back to win the Masters, but you know what? I want to actually be able to go out there and play. So the lesson to be learned is, you know, this is about perseverance. This is about, you know, never giving up, never quitting. But I will say this, because now let me just be a little cynical. You ready? Do you follow at all what has happened here with Phil Mickelson? Is that on your radar?
Yeah.
I feel like there's a part of Tiger Woods that is just sticking it to Phil Mickelson just even that much more.
Maybe, but here's the thing. I don't think that in 2022, anybody except for relatively extreme golf heads even think of that as a thing anymore. It's like, you know, like Tiger Woods exists in a completely different stratosphere for the average sports fan, and even I would say the average golf fan, than Phil, because I hadn't even thought of that once. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that I think of everything, though, but I think that that might be a reach.
But let me, well, hold on. Let me tell you something. I don't know if you saw this or not, but a few months ago, the PGA Tour has this thing that they do where if you're like the most successful social media influencer as a golfer, they give you a big bonus, a big financial bonus. And Mickelson put out a tweet where he said, hey, thanks to everybody for making me the number one PGA social media influencer. And I think he said something like, and because of you, I get an $8 million bonus. Okay. Well, then Tiger Woods sends out a tweet that says, whoops. And it turns out Tiger Woods was the number one PGA Tour social media influencer. And he only played in one event. That's all it took for Tiger to be far and away the most influential, you know, person on social media. So Phil kind of sent out this tweet that he's the guy, and Tiger totally trolled him. And now with all the controversy around Mickelson, which is, I don't know if you've heard about all of this.
There's no controversy. He's a jerk and he's not playing.
That's not
controversial.
But it's going to go way worse than that for Phil. This is why he is
in
seclusion.
I get it, but that's not as controversial as you think. He made an idiot move, embarrassed himself and, to many extents, the league, and they sat him down.
Well,
that's called consequence.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, man, there's more to this story because the book that is supposed to be a tell-all book about Mickelson is, from what I'm being told, so unbelievably damaging to Mickelson's career that it has created all kinds of problems for him in his real life. And there may be like major, major financial problems because of gambling related stuff. This is all, I've been told this by some, what I would call some very close sources. So I feel like Tiger in some ways is, you know, persevering, showing his kids this is what perseverance looks like. And on the other hand, I just feel like, again, this is the cynical side, like he's just going to take that one more shot to Phil while Phil is as down as he is.
I don't think that I will be talking about Phil Mickelson ever again unless you bring him up. That's what I'm saying. And I will be talking about Tiger Woods for the rest of my life.
Yeah, Tiger Woods. Listen, here's my hope. You ready?
Yeah.
I want Tiger Woods to go out there and shock the world. How incredible would that be?
What, by running a 4.340? How's he going to shock the world?
No,
winning a golf tournament is not shocking the world.
By
he's
winning
Tiger.
The Masters.
He's Eldrick Woods. If he wins a golf tournament, it's not shocking. Because you know what he does best?
Yeah.
Win golf tournaments.
No,
but it should
no,
be
man.
Good. It'll be one of those deals where if he's on the course, probably play 2 days. I don't see him making that cut necessarily. You know what I mean? But he'll probably have a dedicated cam those first couple days, which is what we love. You know what I'm saying? I love how they do that. You can follow one golfer these days. That'll probably be a pretty big deal.
Yeah. If Tiger Woods could be in this thing on Sunday, this would be one of the most incredible stories, because to come back from these kinds of injuries and to come back yet again. But this is just wishful thinking because I'm a huge Tiger fan. All right, stick around, everybody, because it is time for Big Deal or No Deal. That's next. This is Sedano and Cap with Clinton Yates in for Sedano. This is 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Not Sedano. It's your boy Yeehaw. What's up, Cap?
Yo, do your thing, man. It's time to play Big Deal or No Deal. You ready to go?
I am ready.
I'm ready. All right.
Here's Lindsay Baseball.
Let's go.
So country music superstar Eric Church, he's going to be amidst a sold-out crowd this Saturday, just not the one that he was supposed to headline. In a note to fans released through Ticketmaster today, Church announced that his show scheduled for Saturday night in San Antonio would be canceled. That's because he's going to be attending the Final Four matchup between his beloved Tar Heels and their arch rivals, the Duke Blue Devils. He wrote, quote, "As a lifelong Carolina basketball fan, I've watched Carolina and Duke battle over the years, but to have them match up in the Final Four for the first time in the history of the NCAA tournament is any sports enthusiast's dream. This is also the most selfish thing I've ever asked my fans to do, to give up your Saturday night plans with us so that I can have this moment with my family and the sports community." So is the fact that Eric Church, who is a big country star, canceled a concert so he can go watch his team in the Final Four a big deal or no deal, Cap?
I'm going to go with no deal for me, but I'm guessing if you were a Eric Church fan and you'd bought tickets and you'd made plans, you probably would disagree with me and you'd probably call this a big deal, a really big deal. But I want to get him at his best. I don't want him like thinking to himself, hey, this North Carolina Duke game is on and I have no interest in being out here singing these songs and performing for these people, because all I want to know is I want to check my phone to see what's going on in the game. So for me, because I'm not an Eric Church fan and I wasn't going to the show, for me it's no deal, but I'll bet you for his fans, they're probably pissed.
Yeah, but if you're no deal for me, if you're a fan of the guy or the music, you should probably be a fan of him doing things that he likes. He's got an album called Carolina. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like this is about as easy of a layup to understand if you're a fan as there's going to be. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't an emergency change. It wasn't as if you learned something new about him that was not otherwise there. Duke and UNC, Final Four, Coach K, you know, final, potential final game. This is an obvious one to me. And I mean, sure, if you're a fan, you're upset because maybe you made plans in San Antonio or whatever. But, like, come on, man. This is obvious. This is reasonable. And I don't think he had to say that he was selfish at all. He wants to watch a game. That's not going to happen at a time that he can do other things. It makes sense to me.
Clinton, let's come
back to this
topic. So,
the fan base is going crazy. The fan base is going crazy because, like, a lot of people, like, people were talking about this a lot on Twitter earlier today. And people are like, oh, I'll never spend a dollar on him ever again. And that's the most selfish thing you could do. And, like, I'm a Duke fan and I wouldn't even do what you're doing. And, I mean, he didn't even postpone it. He just straight up canceled it, refunded everybody's money. That's
yes.
A lot of money.
Operative word there. Refunded everybody's money. And let me be clear about this, Los Angeles. Those fans are stupid. Moving right along.
Hey, I want to revisit this, not necessarily related to Eric Church, but back to Coach K and Duke versus North Carolina on Saturday night. So let's keep going on Big Deal or No Deal, but we got more time. I want to come back to that.
Okay.
All right, next one. So when Deshaun Watson was traded to the Browns, they gave him that big five-year, $230 million deal that was fully guaranteed. And Steve Bisciotti is like many NFL executives who are not fans of that deal. The Ravens owner spoke at the annual league meetings yesterday, and he was openly critical of the Browns' decision to give Watson the massive deal. He said, quote, "It's like, damn, I wish they hadn't guaranteed the whole contract. I don't know that he should have been the first guy to get a fully guaranteed contract. To me, that's something that's that groundbreaking. It'll make negotiations harder with others. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to play that game, you know? We shall see." So is what Steve Bisciotti said a big deal or no deal, Cap?
I'm going to say it's a big deal, and the reason I think it's a big deal is because he's right in that because the Cleveland Browns gave Deshaun Watson, who is, by virtue of the story, a controversial character, regardless of how you feel about him, because they gave him the contract they did, and it's fully guaranteed when NFL contracts aren't fully guaranteed. So when they give a guy who's got this sort of an issue that's following him, this amount of money and it's fully guaranteed, what do you suppose is going to happen next? The next guy in line for a monster contract is not only going to want the big signing bonus and the upfront money, that player is going to want and expect that the standard has been set and now I'm entitled to a fully guaranteed contract. And I think that the Browns, I don't think that they thought this thing through and how it would be seen by other ownership around the NFL. So I think it's a big deal.
The reason it's a big deal is because of what Scott said. It's about the rest of the league. Forget about the Browns. It's more about the fact that, like, when it comes to how contracts are negotiated, it's not just the NFL with itself. It's the NFL with the rest of the world in terms of, like, you know, with the movement of player empowerment has led us to a series of things that have forced, have allowed players to do a lot more. I'm thinking of LeBron James, for example, a bunch of 1 and 2 year contracts that give him a lot more flexibility. These are all guaranteed. It's a big deal because if the NFL moves to that kind of a model, everything sort of changes. You know, he revealed the quiet part out loud, Bisciotti did, which is that we're definitely not trying to pay people as much as they're worth, or we're trying to make sure that we only pay people as little as we can. That was probably not the best move in terms of understanding what it is that your workforce wants. And so you don't need to sign guys to $10 million deals, or rather 10-year deals, if guys would probably take 2 or 3 guaranteed. It just kind of changes the way you do business overall. And for him to say that out loud, I thought it was a bit of a mistake. But Lamar Jackson responded to it, and he said he's not trying to go anywhere. So I think it'll work out overall. But, yeah, I mean, revealing that wage suppression is some part of your operation, probably not the best idea for an owner in the league.
Yeah, but you know what, Clinton? I'll tell you, man, a quick story about this. I remember when Adrian Gonzalez, who's now going to be doing pre- and post-game for Dodger games on television, but years ago when Adrian Gonzalez was trying to figure out what he was going to do, this is before he left San Diego and went to Boston, and before he left Boston and went to L.A., I remember talking to him and saying, well, why don't you just take less money to stay home? And his answer was, because if I take less money, I'm really screwing over my peers, the guys who are going to come from behind. You know, the next guy, the next big star first baseman is going to say, well, I'm not going to make as much because Adrian took less.
Yeah, but that's a different model. That's what my point is. If you're going from longer non-guaranteed contracts to shorter guaranteed contracts, you're switching the larger model. You're not just operating within the data points of it already being there. That's why it's a larger discussion, because it's like if Lamar Jackson says, I want 2 years, whatever, $100 million, what are they going to say, no? You know what I'm saying? Like, it changes it from a point of player power, not necessarily the other way around, because of where it already is, not just because of where it might go.
You're exactly right. Yeah. You're 1,000% right on. But if you're the owner, you're like, do I really want to give this guy a fully guaranteed $100 million contract? Because all of a sudden in game two, he blows out his knee and he never plays again. I'm just giving an extreme example, but the money's guaranteed. That's always been the football model.
Yeah, well, that's my point. Guaranteed. That model might need to change. They expect people to keep playing football. You know what I mean?
The Cleveland Browns may have changed the entire model with Deshaun Watson. That's a very interesting point.
No, the idea is that the Ravens might change the model with Lamar. That's the point.
All right.
Adam Schefter, yeah, real quick. Adam Schefter did say the other day that the Browns, like what the Browns did, like obviously the rest of the league is not happy about it. And he said that they like single-handedly changed the way that players are played. Like,
I'm not buying that. The Browns are idiots and everybody knows that. And so, like, I think that this corrects...
Any chance you have to just take a shot at the Browns, you know? Like, who cares about the Browns? Any chance you have.
I'm sorry.
You know?
Did I...
Yeah, you struck a nerve.
Did I wake up yesterday and realize that the Browns are a relevant franchise in the NFL? What are we talking about?
It's all right. It's all right. I get it.
Sitting in Los Angeles with the Super Bowl champions are right here celebrating. You know, that's something that we do well. We make sure that we have all of our departments in line. Multiples is something that we do. I'm Sean McVay. I've won more Super Bowls than the Browns. Anyway, what I'm saying is that it's not about what the Browns might do. It's about what the next thing is. And if Lamar says, actually, I don't need all that. Just give me what I'm worth in the time I want to do it. That's what changes the model, not what happened beforehand. I'm talking about that from a business standpoint.
Okay, so sports fans these days notice everything, and Lakers fans are no different because 2 days ago, one fan tweeted about how the Lakers never use LeBron in post-game social media graphics that give the final score after a loss. That led another fan named Kenny Beecham to do a deep dive into the Lakers' Twitter account. He discovered that the Lakers literally have never once used LeBron in a graphic from a loss. Do other stars get featured in those loss graphics? Sure. Steph Curry, Giannis, Luka, they all have. So is the fact that the Lakers never put LeBron on that final score graphic in a loss a big deal or no deal? Clinton?
Now this is a big deal to me because this gets into, I actually think, Scott, a reasonable entry point to the real Laker discussion. Because what is intonated in this is that he has some sort of contractual clause that doesn't allow him to be associated with losing in public. And that, to me, is pretty lame. Like, just as far as a lot of this stuff goes, if you're that concerned about what's happening on social media with your team, I don't love that. That's actually a point where I agree with Laker fans who think that some of LeBron's actions are not necessarily that petty, right? You know, they don't necessarily think that LeBron is connecting to the community. If this is really the case, I tend to agree with them. I'm not a big fan of this.
Yeah, I'm going to make this quick because we're up against a break. I think it's a big deal, too. And I was shocked when the guy went back and, like you said, Lindsay, did a deep dive and he found out never one time has LeBron's face been used on a loss. Russ has, AD has, you know, all these other guys have, but not LeBron. And I was absolutely shocked to find out that that was actually the case. So, yeah, I think it's a really big deal. All right, stick around. We got a lot more to finish up with here. Clinton Yates is in for George Sedano, and we have there's been so much stuff we still haven't gotten to yet today, including, Clinton, I want to ask you this question. Contemplate this during the break. Do you do any wagering of any kind on sports? And I want to tell you why I'm asking the question. Coming right back. This is Sedano and Cap on 710 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Oh, man, that's great. That is right. Fantastic.
Let me reset this story, though, for anybody that did not hear it. Clinton Yates is in today for George Sedano. Clinton will be back with us tomorrow.
Yep.
Although tomorrow, Clinton, we got a short show.
Yeah, we got a little shorty.
So just tell the story again for anybody that's tuning in and missed it earlier because it's a great story.
The short version is this, and there'll be a video up of it on social later because that's what we were doing. We were actually photographing me and filming me tell this story. Short version is this. Wacky radio bit involves me, Scott, and Greg going down to the Lakers game in rompims. My rompim happened to look great. As the president of the local chapter of the Handsome Man community, this is not news. However, when we got to the suites, I happened to pop over to a suite to see a couple friends of mine, a couple friends we know who happen to be in the television business, Mina Kimes and Pablo Torre. I'll also add, parenthetically, that I had not added before, Scott made a beeline to introduce himself to Mina when
that
happened.
You know what the thing is
which
that
was fantastic.
She's walking into the suite. I'm walking into our suite. And 2 years ago at the Super Bowl, I was there, and the guys on my podcast were like, yo, there's Mina Kimes. I got to get a picture with her. And I'm like, who's that? Like, I mean, I literally 2 years ago did not know who Mina Kimes was. So she's come on the show with me and George like 10 times, and I'm like, I might as well say hello and introduce myself.
That's what's
so
up.
I wanted to put a face with a name. So now, keep going. You go over to the suite.
No. So I go over. We're in our suite, the ESPN LA suite. Everybody's there. Some listeners are there. Other people are there. Kate's is there. And so I look over, and I say, hey. By the way, I'm wearing this ridiculous romper because I'm with these fools. Look at the blast we're having. They're like, no worries. You look fantastic. Another guy who I don't know says, you know these guys? Come on over. I come on over. Next thing I know, Kesha asked me if I want to be her boyfriend for the night in front of a whole bunch of people. And I was like, nice offer. No thanks. I'm taken. I'm going to go see my friends now. And that's the story. It was great.
Yeah. And I was like, who's Kesha?
Yeah. Well,
which is. Probably not shocking to anybody.
That's fine, but it was a fun event. It was a nice cherry on top of an already absurd cupcake.
All right, let me ask you a question because I asked you this before the break. Do you wager on sports at all?
I do not.
Nor do I. Have you ever bet on any games of any kind?
I have not.
Okay, I bet on one game one time in my life. I'm about 19 years old. I'm in college. I got these guys who live next door to me, and they're telling me, they're like, yo, you should put a couple dollars on the game time, Monday Night Football. I'm like, I don't get it, guys. Tell me more. I don't understand. They're like, well, we're going to call our bookie, and we're going to put some money on the game. And I think the Buffalo Bills were playing the Cincinnati Bengals. It was Jim Kelly's Buffalo Bills, old school. And I'm like, oh, the Bills are going to kill the Bengals. So what do I do, guys? And they're like, well, tell us what you want to bet. I'll take $50 for the Bills to win. Lo and behold, the Bills lose, right? And the next day they're like, yo, we need that $50. And I'm like, you have to pay that? Oh, I didn't realize that. So I lost my first bet on a football game. Clinton, if I would have won that bet, who knows where I might be right now, you know? I mean, yeah. I'd probably be a sports gambler.
Yeah, that seems to be a pretty reasonable extrapolation.
Yeah, no, so I'm not at all.
Yeah, but, I don't bet because I like money too much.
But a friend of mine, I don't want to say who, a friend of mine told me last night that he bet $7 on one of these daily fantasy kind of sites, you know?
DFS.
He bet $7, and the $7 wager won him $1,000.
He probably had a pretty wild parlay. I'm guessing five or six, probably even 10 teams.
Okay, so I asked him, I said, can you explain to me how you turned $7 into $1,000? And he said, well, I had these, just like you said, all these parlays. Now, I wouldn't know how to put a parlay bet together to save my life. But I sent it to Lindsay. Lindsay, have you been able to read and understand what this friend of mine did, what kind of wager he made that $7 could turn into $1,000? Because let me tell you something. In horse racing, that's the only betting I do. In horse racing, if you put down a $7 win bet, that horse would have to be like 250-1 for the $7 to turn into $1,000.
Well, I mean, as somebody who does a lot of wagering myself, especially when I'm in Vegas, I'm a big fan of the parlays because, you know, you just put like a couple bucks on them, like your friend did $7. I put like $5 on some weird parlays. Like there was a guy that just last week in the news who put like $5 on seven different teams, like players to score the first basket, and he won like $1 million. But anyway, this particular parlay was, let's see, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So you had to have Giannis score get over 12.5 rebounds. The Milwaukee Bucks had to win, money line bet. James Harden had to make over 2.5 threes. And then in a different game, Kevin Durant had to make over 2.5 threes. A different game, Russell Westbrook had to make over 19.5 points. And Luka had to score over 8.5 points. So all of those things had to happen. He put $7 on it for them to win.
So Scott, let me say this quickly. I mean, I think that there's a difference between do I gamble and do I understand the gambling world. And my man, you better get on the boat, bro, because that's pretty much where this business is going. If you don't understand parlays and all the parlance of the gambling world, you're gonna get left, player, because they're the ones buying everything up in terms of like media opportunities and all that. So the only reason I say that is because I don't gamble. I'm a grown man. I'm not gonna start doing something at this stage that, you know, sort of injurious to my life potentially. But I do have a lot of friends who do gamble, and I kind of appreciate, now that it is mainstream, what the gambling world brings to the table. Bad Beats by Scott Van Pelt, one of the best segments on the network, straight up. So I'm kind of in, but I'm out in that way.
Yeah, no, I'm well aware, and I know that the gambling world is taking over, and that it will be a much larger conversation, particularly on sports radio going forward, because this whole thing about the ease of gambling is so attractive to young males in particular. But let me ask this question, though, Lindsay. When you look at the wager, the way it was done, is that somebody being creative? Like, okay, I'm going to say Giannis has to do this, and Russell Westbrook has to do that, and Luka has to do this, and Durant has to do that. Is it somebody being creative and coming up with this, or is it the actual wagering platform saying, here's a bet you could make. If you take these five things, it'll only cost you $7. Do you want to take this risk? Is that how it works?
You have to pick them out yourself. Like the way that I do it when I do parlays, like I'll do it the same exact way. You can like open like the special parlay ticket page, and you can just pick random things from games. And then each one you add, it shows your odds going up and up and up, which means like your win goes up. So,
all right. I want to try this. I mean, for $7, why not learn how to experiment? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people make whole livings off of this. And I know that what I know is that I like watching sports because I like watching sports. Some people need a little extra juice to get them interested, and I got no issues with that. It's about time it was legal. It's a separate matter.
Yeah, yeah. Clinton, give me an idea. What do you got going on for dinner tonight? I'm trying to figure out something creative, different, you know, maybe get together with a girlfriend tonight.
You know what I actually did yesterday quickly? My cousin posted a recipe, and it looked so good, I told him to send it to me, and then I made that. It was a honey glazed chicken with sautéed kale and bell peppers. It was good.
This happened last night?
This happened two nights ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Any plans tonight? Any thoughts tonight?
No, got an airport pickup. That's about it. But I live close to the airport, so it's okay.
Okay, Laura, you got any concepts, any ideas? I mean, now that you got your own place, are you making dinners at home? Are you going out everywhere? Tell me.
I'm still moving, so I'm going out all the time. I'm actually going to go have sushi with friends.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Linz, any thoughts, any ideas?
You should make your own pizza. That's like a fun, healthy thing to do. Make your own pizza. You're like, no, too much work.
Yeah, pizza is the one thing that's kind of tough to say it's easier to do because delivery is the method.
You buy the pizza dough. The pizza dough and everyone makes their own, you know. Way tastes better. It's healthier.
It sounds like fun, but anyway.
Yeah. I'll be back tomorrow.
Clinton, I will see you tomorrow, Clinton Yates. Great job by you. Amazing work by Lindsay and Laura. Thanks to all the 710 listeners. We're back tomorrow at 4. Until then, peace out, everybody.